From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The filmmaker Matt Fuller says there's this misperception about people with autism. It's almost like an urban legend that they can't make eye contact. Well, first of all, it's not true, though it depends on where a person may be on the spectrum. But the idea implies people with autism aren't interested in intimacy, and that's not how it works. I've seen it explained this way, that the deficit isn't in a person's desire. The deficit is in the social skills they have to cope with something so complicated as love. Today in the program, we're talking about Matt Fuller and Carolina Groppa's film Autism in Love, which is a profile of four adults who are seeking out and working through meaningful romantic relationships. And here's one of the big questions in the film. Can someone love you without truly understanding you? Join us after the news.
Hey, I'm Elaine Clark, one of the producers for Radio West, inviting you to check out Video West. It's our online showcase of short documentaries about the places and people that make Utah what it is. You can stream the films at videowest.kuer.org. And if you like what you see and hear, we hope you'll share it with your friends. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Matt Fuller and Carolina Groppa have made an incredibly intimate film about autism. But the film is not about autism, not in the sense that you have experts and medical professionals on camera explaining how autism spectrum disorder works. It's a profile of four people who are in love or have been in love or who want to be in love. In a title card right up front in the film, they give you the basics. Autism is a developmental disorder characterized by a difficulty to form relationships. And then this one, love. Love is a profoundly tender and passionate affection for another person. And as you can see, those two things don't seem to go together very well. But the film dispels that myth, that people who find themselves somewhere on the autism spectrum can, in fact, have meaningful romantic relationships. And there are some big questions in this film, like, what are the essentials you need in a relationship? What can you give up? Can you really find romantic love if you don't love yourself? The film is called Autism in Love, and we're going to be screening it next week. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. Joining us today to talk about the film is Matt Fuller. He directed and produced it. It premiered, by the way, at the 2015 Tribeca Film Festival. Carolina Groppa is the producer of the film, and they're both joining us today from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Matt Fuller, Carolina Groppa, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Doug.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, I guess I wanted to begin with when you first started this project, and we can sort of talk about how you came to the idea and those kinds of things, but what is it that you knew about autism and about autism and love, what did you know at the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, not much, really. I mean, Carolina nor I had much experience with autism prior to the film. I think we both had kind of a pop culture understanding of what autism was, and it was certainly a boogeyman, you know, in our eyes based on that limited understanding. But we wanted to know more. I mean, Carolina can kind of, you know, fill you in on the genesis of the idea, but, you know, having such a limited understanding of autism really fueled our curiosity to understand it more deeply.
Yeah, and I would say that it actually ended up working in our favor because we knew nothing about it. So when we set out on, you know, the course to explore this topic of adults with autism specifically and romantic relationships, we had no agenda, we had no biases, we knew nothing. So we just began from scratch in that way.
You know, it's interesting. I guess the sort of, Matt, you mentioned the sort of pop cultural idea that people have of autism, and it's pretty simple-minded. It's kind of Rain Man, you know, probably, I guess, and it's pretty, the idea that they don't want to be touched and that you shouldn't make eye contact, and I mean, that's the thing that the film really goes after, I have to say, and I wanted you to talk about that kind of, because you've described it as sort of an urban legend, that thing, because the film is really intimate, and that seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I do think that the media in general had made autism into this big, scary, thing, and they tend to report only on the extremes, right? So Rain Man is a great example. That's kind of the most of our image of what autism is. It's somebody who's very severely affected, and, you know, they really have very limited communication skills, and that certainly is, you know, an authentic experience for many people on the spectrum, but there's also a whole heck of a lot of other experiences on the spectrum. And that was, you know, once we dug into this and started really spending time with people on the spectrum and understanding the community and really the breadth and depth of the autism spectrum, it became clear to us that there was a lot people weren't talking about and a lot that they weren't showcasing. And so that is a huge part of what we wanted to dig into with this film, was to, you know, to as accurately as one film can represent the autism spectrum. We wanted to give you insight into not only the description of those different places on the spectrum, but what it was actually like to be a person on the spectrum affected in different ways, how that manifests in your life, and either, you know, how that impacted one of the most intimate and kind of universal desires that everybody, those on the spectrum included, have, which is the desire for romantic connection.
Yeah.
And I'd add to that also from the point of view of the experience of someone on the spectrum, because in our preliminary research, we found so much, so many documentaries and books that have been written from the perspective of a parent or of a therapist or of a sibling. And there was very little from the point of view of people themselves on the spectrum. And so that was also very important to us.
Yeah, I think, and even more to our earlier point about our, you know, lack of academic background or clinical understanding of autism, we knew that we weren't qualified nor interested in making something that was didactic or really diving into the science or the, you know, that which causes autism. We wanted to create an opportunity for adults on the spectrum to share their voice with the world in a way that was compelling, cinematic, and authentic at the end of the day.
There was this, I've seen you talk about that, the kind of, I guess, the filmmaking technique that you employed to get this idea of intimacy across. Would you talk about that, how you established intimacy and just in the images and the way we see them on screen?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think at the end of the day, it's achieved through a few things. But one of the choices that was made early on, kind of in a vacuum before we got into production, was this idea of direct address. And that is where the person who's speaking, the subject, is looking directly into the camera as if to speak directly to the audience. Now, typically, in an interview context, filmmakers will have subjects look off camera, you know, speaking directly to the interviewer. My thinking was that we wanted to do everything we could from an aesthetic point of view to create a sense of intimacy between the audience and the subjects. So this is something that was inspired by one of my favorite filmmakers, Errol Morris, who uses this technique. We used an apparatus that essentially reprojected my face while I was interviewing these subjects in front of the camera on a two-way mirror, so that it does appear that they're speaking directly to the audience and looking directly into the camera. So again, that was something that was made, a choice that was made kind of in a vacuum before we started production, knowing that it was going to give us a leg up in that sense of intimacy. I think as we went through production, we realized that, you know, trust and time were also things that were going to contribute to that feeling of authenticity and access to the subjects. I mean, we really worked very hard to create a safe place for each of these subjects to share this really vulnerable, intense part of their life with us. And that was, again, part of the greater agenda of authenticity and creating a platform for them to share their story instead of an editorialization or a kind of sensational exploitive piece from, you know, two filmmakers' point of view.
Yeah. You know, you really lucked out with the characters that you picked. They're amazing. And I want to have people meet them all. Let's meet Lenny first.
Sure.
Let me play a moment for there's this sort of through line going through Lenny's story, this complicated relationship he has with his identity, with the fact that he has autism. Of course, he knows he has autism. He's not entirely sure what that – I mean, he does know what that means for him, but he's not sure of sometimes the bigger picture. Let's play this moment from the film, and I want to really talk about Lenny.
Sure. Sometimes in my life, I tried to pretend I was never autistic. Felt like I had to hide it from people. Because if they heard you were it, then they would kind of laugh at you a little bit. People would think to me like, you know, he's cool. And if they found out I was in that situational that they would be like, oh, he's kind of a weird kid, we shouldn't be hanging out with him. Sometimes I feel a little bit scared because let's say you see a girl and she likes you and all this stuff, and maybe if you admit it, you're autistic, maybe she'll be like, I don't want to be with you no more because you're autistic. I don't know, because that could be a little hurtful a little bit. I'm single, by the way. I've been single for a long time. Had one girlfriend, but it didn't quite work out that well. I don't want to talk about that. Is that okay? Just, you know, bad memories.
What's interesting about that clip is something that comes to be really important in, I think, the film, and that is Lenny talking to you, Matt, talking to us, too. I mean, that's the thing that comes across, because he's looking at us talking to us. And would you talk about that as a conceit, just how interesting that is? Lenny's talking to us. They're all talking to us, but directly to us. You know what I mean? And it's just there's something really different about that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, again, just going back to the idea of getting out of the way of their perspective, of Lenny's perspective, right? There need be no editorial. There need be no manipulation of that. It was the quicker we could get his voice to the audience, the more, you know, effective it was going to be for the audience. But again, the more authentic it was going to be. I mean, I serve as a proxy in that situation just to kind of solicit conversation and sort of steer him to the questions that, you know, I felt like would be most emotionally resonant. But, you know, again, that was it's all in service of authenticity. The most important thing for us was that this was an honest film and an honest portrait. And what better way to do that than to connect the audience to the subjects as immediately as possible?
Carolina, describe Lenny. Talk to us a little bit about him. Introduce him. He's such a man. You just love him throughout the film.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Lenny really represents a lot of us, you know, in the way that he is still searching for himself and still struggles with self-acceptance and self-love. And he is really such a great entry point into the film and into the spectrum of love. You know, he's at the beginning of this sort of journey, as I mentioned, with self-love and looking for relationships. And he's very, feels very ready for a girlfriend, but is still, you know, he's in his early 20s. So he's still struggling to sort of understand certain concepts of what it means to be a man. And that transition from a teenager into adulthood is difficult for most people. And I think he really feels it the most and is so self-aware in a way that I've never quite met anyone who's so self-aware and is so open on camera. And like you mentioned, you know, we were so incredibly lucky to have access to these people and their trust, but also the amount of incredible things that happen in their lives and the short amount of time we spent with them is still boggles my mind, you know, that everything we captured essentially only happened over the course of 9 months in these people's lives. And it was a big year for all of them, I would say.
Yeah. Let's talk about Lenny's mom, Kathy, who's terrific.
Absolutely.
Talk about her, because she's really critical in the film. We don't get a chance to spend a lot of time with her necessarily, but what time we do is really important. Talk about
his
mom.
Yeah, I mean, Kathy's a personal hero of mine. She's somebody who works so hard and really is coming to the table with so little. And by that, I mean, you know, Lenny comes from a family where their primary source of income for the majority of his life is welfare. And therein lies this other issue we hope to highlight, you know, through Lenny's story, which is the socioeconomic injustices of kind of the autism support system, particularly here in California. Mm-hmm. Lenny wasn't diagnosed until he was 12 years old, and he was only diagnosed because Kathy knew that all the things that the school system was throwing out as a diagnosis were incorrect. ADHD, you know, we can go through a list of diagnoses they threw at him, but it wasn't until she dug into some research at a local library did she discover an autism spectrum disorders, and she had him evaluated quickly, and you know, he then got diagnosed. But really, there's those formative years that he went undiagnosed and therefore untreated and unsupported, really because of lack of, in my opinion, financial resources. Mm-hmm. And so bringing that back to Kathy and her significance in the film, it, you know, we really wanted to highlight how hard she has worked and how unyielding her love and support is for her son, yet the things that she you know, is missing to help him get to a place where he really needs to be.
Yeah.
She's an incredibly loving, supportive mother, as anybody in the film can see. She works very hard to help her son, but, you know, one parent's effectiveness in this particular situation is limited, unfortunately, by the additional support that they can kind of corral up for their child. And Lenny is the perfect example of what it looks like to go unsupported and undiagnosed for a large portion of your life. So yeah. I guess to bring it back to Kathy, she's somebody who's so inspiring, and I hope, you know, I'm sure she's not the only one in her situation. My hope is that she offers some inspiration or support to others who are there, and that, you know, it will be okay, and things, you can triumph despite those circumstances.
Let me play another scene. This is with Kathy talking to Lenny in his bedroom. And it's great. It's just so, again, so intimate. You're right there. And she's sort of talking to him, Lenny, let's try an online dating profile.
Right.
And he's, you know, he's reluctant, but he still sort of wants to, but he only wants to reveal so much about himself. And I want to talk to you about that. Let's play this moment, because this idea of independence and how much you should reveal or can reveal, how much you can be private and independent, all of those things really come out in this exchange with his mom, where he's, you know, he's a little bit sexist here, I guess, a little, and she sort of calls him on it. But it's a really great moment. Here it is from the film, Autism in Love.
So we talked about a dating website a little bit.
Yeah, I think I might want to do that.
What would you put if you were, like, putting, like...
I don't know. It's hard to say. I like to keep it private to me and you only. I'm going to be serious. I'm not going to be no joking around.
Okay, if you were going to put on a dating website, like, your interest...
Sports.
Okay. What else? You wouldn't put... How come you wouldn't put any of, like, the Comic-Con stuff? Do you think that's
nope.
silly?
I won't do it.
How come?
Because I don't want to.
Okay.
That's you, that's...
But why don't you don't want to find somebody that likes that kind of stuff too? So what other interests would you put?
I don't know. I'll be taking more serious.
So you want, like, a serious girl?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. A businesswoman?
No, not completely. But I pay for the dates. Me. It's the way it goes.
Okay.
That's the way it sure goes. I'm not going to let her pay for everything of me. You know, I got to be the one that's the more independent one than her.
But I don't think that that's fair.
No, it is fair.
It's kind of chauvinistic.
No, it's not.
I think a little bit. I mean, what if there's a woman out there that is perfect for you, but she makes more money than you do?
Nope. I won't take her. I'm serious. I won't take her.
Explain what's going on there, because he wants to be like everybody else. He wants to be independent. Would you explain what's happening here? It's really interesting.
Yeah. So the setup of the scene essentially is Lenny's mom sort of introducing the idea of finding a girlfriend or a romantic connection through an online dating site. Now, to back up a step, the chief obstacle, at least as I see it in Lenny's life, is that he sees himself as an other.
Yeah.
He is different from everybody. He is not accepted by his peers. And again, in his mind, this is all because he is on the autism spectrum. So he does everything he feels within his power to assimilate, to feel like everybody else, to do things that are antithetical to his image of autism. And in his mind, that means being a caretaker. That means being a hyper-masculine mm-hmm. person who can sweep a girl off her feet and pay for dates and, you know, be the alpha in the relationship. And I think the unfortunate part is that his compass for all of those roles, you know, comes from the internet and YouTube and the kind of, you know, whatever advice he can get from a cursory Google search, mm-hmm. you know. And he's very impressionable in that way. So, you know, in the scene, this is Lenny's mom trying to help him understand that one need be their authentic self and express who they are and what they're interested in and what they want in order to attract a meaningful partnership. And it's only, you know, through that transparency that you're going to find someone who is actually a good fit for you.
Yeah.
But that's a tough pill for Lenny to swallow when there's such a deep sense of shame about who he really is. You know, she alludes to the quote Comic-Con stuff. I mean, one of Lenny's most passionate interests is the Power Rangers. You know, he goes to the convention every year. He's a really active member of a lot of fan clubs. So wouldn't it be great if he found someone who was also interested in the Power Rangers and that was a shared interest and they could connect on that level? But he's so ashamed of those interests and views them as so you know, obtuse to the kind of person he wants to get, that he buries him, you know, and as a result, he's left in this spiral of self-hatred, and he's immobilized in that he can't connect with somebody else.
Yeah. He talks about, he says to his mom at this one really powerful moment, I'm trying to be good, Mom. I feel different. And he says, I feel better than being autistic sometimes. Like, do I have to be this thing? Because I feel like I'm not this thing sometimes.
Right. I mean, it's such a class system in his mind, right? I mean, I think even later in the film uses, you know, the reference, everyone else is all the way up here, I'm all the way down there.
Yeah.
You know, it's he really views himself as so beneath everybody else because of this label. And he wants to get rid of it. If he could get rid of autism, he would. You know, he feels it as such a curse and such an inhibiting force in his life that he would like to shed the label if he could. And that's really the central issue that he's struggling with.
Yeah. We'll come back to Lenny a little bit later in the program because this idea of I'm up here, I'm down here, they're up here is represents a really critical moment in the film, and we'll get back to that. Before we head to a break, let's talk about Lindsay and Dave. Let's start with Lindsay, and let me play a moment from the film. She is amazing.
She is amazing.
And people will get a sense here in this. In this clip from Autism and Love. Here's Lindsay.
I always knew I was different. Even before I was informed of my diagnosis of autism, though, I always felt like I was an odd character outside of my peers. But I didn't really understand why. I would often get turned away or people would ignore me. And I thought, well, what am I doing wrong? And even after learning about my own diagnosis, I still, for several years, struggled to figure out why I couldn't maintain, keep friends, why I couldn't fit in, why I couldn't be accepted.
Okay, Carolina and Matt, talk about Lindsay. She's so astute. She has such a sense of self-awareness about it. She's I'm not saying that should be surprising with someone on the autism spectrum disorder, but it is a little surprising, I have to say, again, given the kind of crummy media perception that some of us do have
right.
for it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think, and that's, you know, a large part of the intention of the film, and I think Lindsay does such a great job of doing that. It's, you know, a lot of people aren't aware that intellect and autism are mutually exclusive, and that is to say that, you know, people like Lindsay do exist. People who are highly insightful, highly self-aware, incredibly intuitive, and really just have a very broad and deep sense of the world. I mean, Lindsay is a really spectacular individual. She, you know, as you see in the film, goes through ups and downs and ultimately, I think, triumphs in a big way.
Yeah.
And hopefully that serves as inspiration to, you know, not only people on the spectrum, but people off the spectrum, too. I mean, I think she's aware of the challenges that she faces and that autism presents in her life and in her relationship. But she pushes past them. You know, she's somebody who triumphs in the face of that kind of adversity. And, you know, I'm constantly humbled and shocked by the insight she has into herself, and therefore that, you know, that I kind of investigate in myself. Like, that's, I think, what Lindsay does so well is illuminates those things that are going on in a lot of people's minds, and she's able to talk about them and bring them into conversation so that the rest of us can kind of bring that into ourselves and our relationships and our lives. So she's a huge asset to the film and, you know, really, really brings a lot to the table.
Yeah, we definitely lucked out, as you mentioned, you know, with the people that we ended up spending all this time with. But it was so important to have the female perspective, you know, because autism does occur predominantly in males. So I feel like a lot of people connect with Lindsay because she offers a perspective into sort of autism through the eyes of a female and through a more sort of surprisingly emotional way than some may expect. And I think that's why she is, in a way, a breath of fresh air with just the way that she exposes herself and mm-hmm. is so open and so vulnerable and really brings, like I said, that female perspective onto all of it.
And it's interesting, too, that I wanted to get a sense of what your conversations were like with her, because I'm guessing she had some expectations of you. Like, okay, you guys need, I don't want to be put on a pedestal as just the subject of another inspirational, sentimental story. And she, right? I mean, she must have had some pretty big demands on the way you told her story.
Well, I wouldn't even say that they were demands. I think that she was just insistent upon being her authentic self, and she does that very well. I mean, look, you know, with a film like this, you're looking at a very small portion of somebody's life. And you're looking at a very small portion of who they are. And hopefully those fragments and those pieces construct a portrait that is more meaningful than the audience had expected or, you know, would have had otherwise. But that said, you're looking at a very small portion of a person's life. So that is to say that Autism in Love isn't a complete, full, and accurate representation of who Lindsay is as a person. It is simply a part of her life that we were able to witness and kind of capture in service of this meta portrait that we were creating in the film. You know, but Lindsay was very brave in many ways, particularly that she was so candid and thorough and honest about things she was going through, struggles she was, you know, dealing with both personally and in her relationship. And I think that's all in service of helping people understand autism as a human first condition, meaning that, you know, Lindsay is a person who goes through things that we all go through. Yeah. She happens to have autism, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matt Fuller is with us. He directed and produced the documentary film Autism in Love. Carolina Gropa is producer of the film. Next Wednesday night, you really need to come because we're screening Autism in Love at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. Of course, it's part of our Through the Lens documentaries film series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Matt Fuller and Carolina Gropa are going to be there for a Q&A after the film. Keep in mind, seating is limited, so you'll need to get there early. You can get details about all of it on our website, radiowest.org. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about that really big question, what is love? We're continuing our documentary series today. Next week, we're screening a film about people with autism, people who find themselves somewhere on the autism spectrum, and the challenge for them of finding someone to love. The filmmakers Matt Fuller and Carolina Gropa are with us to talk about the film. It's called Autism in Love. We're screening it on next Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. We'll give you details about that a little bit later. Matt and Carolina are joining us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Okay, I want to talk about Dave. There are some moments in this film that are so funny. you know, we need to make sure people understand that. It's so great. But let's meet Dave first. Let me play a clip. Because Dave is, and now, mind you, Dave and Lindsay are together. Lindsay this artistic person. Dave is a scientist. Dave thinks of things, in these terms. Here's Dave from the film Autism in Love.
Love is a very abstract concept that many people with autism have a hard time grasping. And it's one of those things that's not concrete. As a scientist, I wish I could put it into perspective as a type of subatomic particle, but it's not. Love is basically more like a force. Like in physics, you have forces, and forces of attraction. And I have a feeling that love is the best way to describe that is a force of attraction between two people that is neither visible, measurable, or heard. There's no way to quantify it.
So talk about Dave. So he's thinking of these terms, and he's very pragmatic. That's how he sees the world.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, to back up a step, you know, one of the challenges in Dave's childhood was he had this intense fear of severe weather conditions. When, you know, snow or thunderstorms or lightning would come through, it was something he was really terrified of as a kid. And hats off to his parents for turning that into something that he found very interesting, and they were able to kind of dive into the science of that and make it a less fearful situation for him. Well, incidentally, it became one of Dave's passions, yeah. And he grew up to be a meteorologist. So, you know, weather and the science behind weather are such an intrinsic part of who Dave is. He uses a lot of those paradigms and that thinking to relate to social situations. So, you know, that his understanding of romantic connection, of love, as he puts it, you know, is very similar to the way the kind of unexplainable parts of physics, you know, there are forces between two things that attract. I mean, we can kind of pull that down to its simplest terms, but at the end of the day, there's a mystery to it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, the way that Dave can kind of relate to that.
But the exchanges between the two are so great, because she's talking to him about fears and her understanding and identity, and Dave is, he'll shoot back with these really pragmatic, practical things, and she's kind of rolling her eyes like, oh, he's not really getting it. I mentioned it was funny. This exchange was so great. Lindsay's talking to Dave. They're a couple. You know, she's gotten home from work, and, you know, he's like, hi, honey, how are things? And she's talking to him about something really, this deeply intimate moment about jewelry. Well, let me just play this moment, because it's really, I think it says a lot.
I think that autism definitely presents unique challenges to our relationship. Our particular routines and rigidities and our particular comfort zones, and we're so fixated on that that it's sometimes difficult to communicate to each other.
Love your necklace.
Oh, thanks. Do you know, did I ever tell you one reason I love jewelry so much is because it gives me a shield to sort of protect myself from sort of vulnerable elements.
News to me, actually. I didn't know
that. Oh, really?
Vulnerable element.
Yeah, I kind of discovered that after wearing necklaces for the past several, you know, the past, especially the last 10 years, I've really been into wearing heavy jewelry, and I discovered a reason why it was that it kind of makes me, because I feel so vulnerable and feel so shy, mm-hmm. and, you know, introverted, that wearing the jewelry kind of makes me feel that sort of false sense of confidence, and it kind of makes me feel less vulnerable. It makes me feel like it's sort of a shield, so I protect myself from feeling more vulnerable.
Well, it looks like the weather just came on. I was going to catch a glimpse here and see what he says about
you. I can't ever interrupt you with the weather.
Well, you can always be near me and I may not talk to you as much.
Yeah, but...
It's a film. It's a kind of a scene you have to see, because she's like going on and on about her vulnerability and her necklace, and he's like, "Oh, the weather's on," and in some ways, it's really funny, but it also reveals that this really critical question in the film, and that is, how is it possible that these two decidedly different people, in some ways, are going to make a relationship? And what are the limits of a relationship? What do you need? What do you give? I mean, that whole give and take. Talk about that, if you would, you guys.
Well, I think you're hitting all the nails on the head, but I think even, you know, beyond that, what I hope that scene in particular illuminates is how, you know, we feel so different, but how similar this relationship really is to many of our own. Like, yeah, who hasn't been either Dave or Lindsay in that situation,
right.
really?
Right.
You know, and there's some unique characteristics to that exchange because of who they each are, but... You know, at the end of the day, those are issues that everybody struggles with, that I struggle with, right? I mean, when your partner's asking for your intimate, sensitive attention and you've got other things on your mind, you know, that communication chasm can be really difficult. And so, you know, although Lindsay and Dave have, again, unique challenges because of who they are and where they are on the autism spectrum and their unique interests, et cetera, their issues are not all that different from many of us neurotypical folks in relationships. And so, Hopefully that scene, you know, it's funny, and I think I laugh because it's so familiar, you know, and I think that gives you kind of a permission to go to some of the more challenging places with them, which incidentally make the highs a little bit higher.
Well, and also I think, you know, every day you wake up when you have a partner and you make the decision to stay, you know, to renew that vow daily of commitment to that person, whether or not you're married. And that's actually something that our executive producer, Ira Haleville, once said, you know, when someone asked him how he has been married for so long, I remember so clearly, he said, you know, I just wake up every day and I make the decision to stay. And then next thing you know, 20 years have passed. And I think, you know, you can't point at any two people and no one really has the answer of why two people, how do they make it work? But I think all the challenges that we all face in trying to relate to another person romantically are very similar, if not identical, to the challenges that we see our subjects go through in the film.
She says, Lindsay says, a few things that I think are really critical. One of the things that she mentions, she asked this question, she gets it essentially, can someone love you without truly understanding you? It's almost like that's
great,
a theme.
Great question, isn't it?
Great question.
It's a great question. And what do you think you learned about that? Because it seems like that's almost one of the themes in the film.
Well, I think that maybe the more poignant question is, can you feel loved by someone who you don't think really understands you?
Right.
Right? And that's maybe the more poignant way to look at it. I mean, because we could ask ourselves, like, does anybody really know us? Do we ever really know ourselves? That's the pursuit of a lifetime. So I think going back to the idea of choice, it's like, you know, you choose to be in a relationship, you choose to stay there, you choose to connect with someone and pursue that understanding of who they are, even if at the offset you don't have a deep, complete, and whole understanding of that, you know, it's your choice to continue to pursue that. So I think it's a great question. It's very philosophical, and hopefully that's one of those questions that triggers conversation among audience members. And again, one of those things that is certainly not unique to Lindsay and Dave or people on the spectrum. The search to be listened to and understood is, you know,
universal. Yeah,
very universal.
Yeah. And she says something else that was really important. She said, Dave has been through a lot with me, and this is the critical thing, he's still around. And I was thinking, well, maybe that's what love is, you know, despite it all, you stick around. That's love.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this terrific kind of metaphor that Dave uses later in the film about, you know, the visible light spectrum and electromagnetic waves, and he parallels them to the love you feel for somebody in relationships. And so, you know, there really are seasons to that. There's the initial lustful, very passionate part of relationships, and ultimately you get to a place where, you know, it is a choice to be with someone, and love becomes more of a verb. It's about how you care for someone, how you treat them, your commitment to them, and what that means over the course of a lifetime, ultimately. And so, you know, it's an interesting question to ponder, and I think that it does, you know, again, beg the question, what does romantic love mean to each of us, and what do we want that to be?
And also how you can be on different wavelengths altogether. Yeah. You know, that's one other point that he brings up, and still somehow find a medium ground where those two wavelengths sort of coincide.
Yeah, just some beautiful metaphors, I have to say, in that story throughout. It's
a lot
so
of great,
great
T-shirt opportunities.
No kidding. And so let's play the formula. There's this moment where Dave talks about this formula that he's come up with, and it's really touching. It's really, you were talking about the importance of someone, how they treat you. You know, for Dave, I think he's come up with, you know, he thinks about it, he says, you know, love is 60% practical, 40% emotional. He's sort of working this stuff out. And here he's come up with this formula. Another moment from the film, Autism and Love.
To me, it boils down to three things. I have a formula here. It's L plus P plus 2T. So each part is 25%. So you have 25% of the P and L, and you have 50% of the T, which results to what that person's grade would be in terms of relationship and dating potential. Now, you're wondering, L is how they look physically, physical appearance and attributes. The second P is, the P is personality. What is their lifestyle like? And most importantly, is T is how they treat you, treatment towards you. If, like, say, for example, the person is relatively ugly, then they get like a 50% category in the L category, but they have nearly perfect personality and nearly
perfect way they treat you, they're going to score pretty well in the overall scheme of things. So the T has greater weight. It's twice as much weight in the formula than the personality and looks is how they treat you.
It's Dave, one of the great people you'll meet in the film Autism and Love. Matt Fuller is with us, directed and produced the film. Carolina Gropa produced the film. Next Wednesday night, we're going to be screening it at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. Matt and Carolina will be with us for a Q&A after, so don't miss it. Remember, seating is limited, so get there early. You can get all of the details on our website, radiowest.org. We need to take another quick break, but we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about Matt Fuller and Carolina Gropa's film Autism and Love, which is a profile of four adults who have autism and are seeking out and working through meaningful romantic relationships. We're screening the film next Wednesday night. Matt and Carolina are with us today to talk about it. Let's talk about Stephen. And I'm not sure how much we can talk about. I don't want to give too much away. How much can we talk about Stephen?
Well, let's say that Stephen is a subject in the film who is maybe the most kind of stereotypically embodies what a lot of people think of as an adult on the spectrum. His communication is very severely impaired. you know, connecting with others ostensibly is a really big challenge for him. And he is in a relationship and has been for the better part of his adult life. And so in the film, again, without, you know, kind of giving away too much, we watch Stephen and his partner really traverse some of the most difficult times in a relationship. Again, in, you know, just kind of in service of understanding the full, all of the seasons of both love, life, and kind of all those places on the autism spectrum.
Yeah. There's this moment, and I'm not going to play it because, again, I don't want to give too much away. This is sort of a moment of revelation, which I think is important for people to see. But there's this moment where his partner says to him, "Just look at me and relax." Like this moment of intimacy, even just looking at me and just is so excruciating and must be so difficult. Do you want to say something about that moment?
Yeah. I mean, so that moment is, Stephen's partner is kind of trying to help settle him down so that he's comfortable in this context. And it's this intensely loving, intimate, and familiar gesture that in this very poetic way, I think says more about their relationship than any dialogue, interview, or kind of third-party insight ever could.
Oh, totally.
You know, you really see that connection embodied in this subtle, authentic, and really beautiful way. I think that's, you know, shortly after that, we ask the question to his partner, how do you know that Stephen is in love with you, right? Someone who's so impaired in the way that they communicate and share things, and you know, how is it that you know this person is in love with you? And her answer is, it's in his eyes, it's in the way he looks at me, he gives me these loving eyes, you know. And I think that hits on so much of the fabric of their relationship, but really all relationships. And that is to say that love and that connection is something that's felt, and we can talk about it and anecdotally analyze it, but really at the end of the day, it's a feeling between two people. And we were lucky enough to capture moments that illustrate that and hopefully are palpable to the audience.
I want to come back to Lenny because I want Matt to talk about your relationship. And Carolina, yours for that matter too, but you behind the camera, Matt, and your relationship with Lenny, because there's a moment, and I want to play this, and I have to say, it occurred to me as I was seeing this play out, that it's almost like a playwright could have written this moment. Like it's almost like a soliloquy from a play. It's so profound and so sad and so extraordinary. Lenny gets back in the car and you're talking to you, and he's sort of laying it out for you. And it's Like it's like the I could have been a contender speech. You know, wow. You know what I mean? Like it's so yeah. It's so amazing,
so and, prophetic and poignant.
Oh,
yeah.
it's amazing. And here's this moment from Autism and Love.
I didn't know what the hell happened, man. Let me just tell you what happened. I wish I was not autistic. There, I'm gonna say it right now. I don't like it. Makes me different. I don't like it. I wish I could have been a normal person. I wish I could have been a normal, regular person. My mom says be autistic, accept it. I tried accepting it. It's hard. Can I be honest with you? If I could change something, I'm gonna try to change it, but I told my mom this right now because of how disappointed I was. I would rather be a normal man than be an autistic person with $1 million. There. If God came up to me and says, what do you want? I don't want to be autistic anymore. I wish you could give me a new life, me. I could start my life all over again and I wasn't autistic. There, let me be a normal person. I bet you all the damn people I knew in middle school and high school, they're all in freaking college now. I'm not in college. That's what I wanted when I was in high school. I dreamed of going to college, and I'm not in college. I wanted to go to college. I wanted to go to college. I think now I should have graduated college. I should have been in college right now. I should have graduated college right now. I know so many people that went to college and they're done right now. I can't hang out with people like that. I can't.
Why not?
Because they're higher. They're higher than me. Look, they're up here. I'm down here. I'm all the way down here. They're all the way up here. That's what I think.
What's
arresting, isn't it?
Gosh, I can't get over it. This is playing out there. You're in you're right there. What do you figure your role is right there at that moment?
Well, I think you have to look at it in larger context. I mean, Lenny became a friend first and a collaborator in this project secondly. And, you know, I mean, when I met him, I knew that he would be a great asset to this project, but I also knew that he was in need of friendship, some sort of, you know, mentorship and really just somebody to listen. I mean, he was really struggling when we met and for the duration of the project. And so these few moments where he's, you know, the agony of who he is really erupting, you know, that's moment 5 or 6 in that month where, you know, I'd been party to that kind of pain. And it was only because of that time off camera that I felt that it was okay for us to share that on camera, right? I mean, we had kind of established that intimacy and that trust, and these were things that Lenny wanted to say and needed the world to know. And so it was in those moments that it felt okay to kind of, you know, remove myself from being his confidant and be the director of the film we were making together. So they're tough moments. I mean, when anybody's going through that kind of exquisite pain in front of you, you know, you can't help but fall apart with them. I mean, it, no matter who you are, I mean, or how close you are to them. But in the end, I felt like he was voicing a perspective and a real authentic truth that nobody else had. And I felt like it was important to share that. And so that's why those end up in the movie.
Yeah. And there's a moment we're not going to play and we don't need to even say too much about, but there's this... Mm. This moment that you've talked about as being a moment that will stand out not only in the production, but also, Matt, you've talked about it sort of in your life personally, which gives you a sense of just how personal any of these projects, I guess, can become, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the moment you're referring to is just kind of follows the moment we just listened to in the film, and we won't give too much away about that moment, but there's, you know... It's obvious that I'm on the other side of the camera through this kind of device we were talking about earlier, where my face is in front of the camera, and I'm crying. You know, Lenny is in such a dark, painful place, and he's just letting it bleed in front of the camera. And he tells me not to cry.
Yeah.
You know, he's in that moment so aware, so acutely perceptive to what's not only happening inside of himself, but in me. I mean, it's just shattering of every stereotype and every kind of notion you walk into this movie with. I think even till that point in the film, it's hard for you to imagine that Lenny is so situationally aware.
Yeah.
But in that moment, you really get a glimpse not only into his soul, but his capabilities. And I think that that is exceptionally important. It's a painful moment, but it's a moment that I think irrevocably changes your perception of not only who Lenny is, but who people with autism are.
Less than a minute left. Lindsay in the film quotes this Rumi poem, or Rumi saying, "Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you've built up against it." Would you, Carolina, maybe you, say something about that finally, this idea of barriers? It's another theme in the movie.
I think it's barriers, obviously, with love, but also barriers come from fear, you know, and there is a lot of fear when you hear the word autism and you know nothing about it. Like Matt and I, we knew nothing about it. And you built a barrier against this idea. You don't want to know about it. You hear about it. You just don't want anything to do with it. And so I think what the film has been able to do for people from what we hear and all the messages we get is that it's removing some of that barrier, that these like biases that you would walk into this movie with. And it really gives you an understanding and a deep perception into the lives of these people in a really safe way. You know, that's the power of documentary film. You can walk into the step into and can step into someone else's experience in a really profound way. And I think Lindsay really nails it with that quote.
She does.
You know, and it's something I definitely still process and don't have the answer to.
Yeah.
But we, like we mentioned, we were just so incredibly lucky and fortunate to have access to the people that we had, to have their trust in us and our integrity in this story, and that we always wanted to tell an honest story from their perspective. And even though we did not know where the stories were taking us during the production, you know, we had their trust, and that was all we needed to get to the other side and now be sharing a film that hopefully is the first of many that will start conversations about adults with autism and adults in the mental who are mentally impacted. And what are we going to do with these kids once they grow up and need the support and need the services? And how can we be more compassionate as a culture to the person next to us when we don't really know the full breadth of their experience? Yeah.
Carolina Gropa, producer of the documentary film Autism and Love. Matt Fuller directed and also produced the film. Guys, thanks very much. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Doug, thanks for having us. See you next Wednesday.
Okay. Don't forget, Autism and Love at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center next Wednesday. Go to the website for the particulars. Radio West is a production of KUER News. I'm Doug Fabrizio.